Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Two men are arrested for the shooting outside Lloyd Center Mall last month. The Mississippi River continues to rise, and a whale slams into a sailboat.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, May 13th, 2011. Two men were arrested Thursday and accused of the murder of 14-year-old Shiloh Hampton last month outside the Lloyd Center Mall. Jimmy Ray Sanders Garcia, 20, and 21-year-old Edward Moore were accused of murder, attempted murder, and unlawful use of a weapon. They are both being held in the Multnomah County Jail. Hampton, a freshman at Madison High School, was shot April 18th near the intersection of Northeast 11th and Northeast Multnomah. He died 2 days later from gunshot wounds to his head and abdomen. The suspects were charged with his murder, and they face attempted murder charges because other people were standing with Hampton at the time of the shooting. Following a second shooting the same week, Portland police stepped up gang patrols. Search warrants were served at unspecified locations by CERT teams from the police bureau, Gresham Police, and Washington County Tactical Negotiation Team. Over 100 officers worked on the Hampton case. The effort included the Detective, Drug, and Vice Division of the Portland Police Bureau, as well as its gang unit and the North Precinct. As the steadily rising Mississippi River continues to flow south, officials are working to save New Orleans from a record flood. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal says the final decision hasn't been made, but it is extremely likely that the Army Corps of Engineers will open the Morganza Spillway, which would send water rushing into more rural areas of south-central Louisiana.
Now's the time to take action. If you're in the northern part of the spillway, if you've been advised you're in a low-lying area, now's the time to evacuate your valuables, your loved ones. Now's the time to think about where you want to go. If you've got pets, if you've got livestock you need to move, now's the time to be doing that.
I don't make light of the situation, but can we all agree that Morganza Spillway is linguistically just a great phrase?
It is.
Someday, when this is all safely enough in the rearview mirror that that we can do this sort of thing, I'm going to form a band called the Morganza Spillway, and it's going to be like a Zydeco Italian sort of thing.
So I was thinking it'd be a great name for a porn actress.
Morganza Spillway?
Yeah.
Or
Or the Morganza Spillway would be like, some fancifully named but totally obscure part of your body. You know, yes. Like your xiphoid process or whatever the hell that is.
Yes. It has something to do with your spleen.
Yeah.
That's where all the toxins go, into the Morganza Spillway. Jindal says they're trying to get the word out to affected residents.
We have already notified the sheriffs that they should go ahead and proceed with their door-to-door notification plans. National Guard is supporting them in their mission.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday.
Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's right. It is. There's a curse on that mine. You're listening to Legion of News. It's Friday the 13th of May, yes?
Yes.
Yes. 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later in this hour, entertainment news, also science in the march. You want to get this program via iTunes, you can do that. It is also available as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you as a mobile product, a product that accompanies you wherever you might go in this great big crazy world as you stamp the terra firma. That's mobile.cascadia.fm via your smartphone or what have you. That's mobile.cascadia.fm. Cascadia.fm, and then next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. The Rick Emerson radio program today featuring Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101, talking about the life and legacy of Mr. Rodney Dangerfield. Here is Don Taylor.
U.S. Coast Guard officials report a whale damaged a sailboat near Astoria. Portlander Ryan Barnes told the Coast Guard that the whale struck his father's 38-foot sailboat, ironically titled the La Orca.
Okay, that's not only not ironic, that's like the absolute opposite of ironic.
Well, because
an orca is a whale.
I know.
So it's not...
So a whale hit his boat that he named the whale.
You wouldn't call it ironic if one whale bumped another one.
No.
So...
But I mean the fact that they decide, I think the whales are so beautiful and delightful, and I'm going to name my boat after the whale. And then a whale smashes it. That there is a little irony there.
Okay.
I believe that does qualify as. I mean, I am with you that the word ironic is used incorrectly most of the time. But in this case, I say that the fact that a whale smashed the boat that was named the whale does count as irony.
I get two things. One, I don't know if I actually told you this, but so when I was at the signing for Mike Russell and David Walker at Bridge City Comics last month, so Courtney Hameister was there. And she wrote that out. Did you ever read that that piece that she did for for McSweeney's about the she was about a brand new punctuation
yes.
mark?
Yes, I did read that.
So then I told her that she had to create something that was sort of. I told her that she had to create a word that meant what we all think ironic means. I said that you have to coin like a brand new word that will actually be what we all use ironic as, so that irony can actually go back. To being used correctly, and so she said, "Now get right on that," in a way that implied that she was never going to get on that, like not now, not then, not later. Also, you can't adjust it right now because I want to look at it for just a second. But your hair
is doing something crazy.
Well, your hair is always doing something weird. The your headphones and your hair don't play nicely together. They're always doing something really bizarre. But I swear to God. So you got this Snooki from Jersey Shore thing going on.
Aww,
seriously?
Really?
Now, it's like a perfect Fabergé egg of hair.
Oh, God.
That's just perched above. Okay, you can adjust it now. I'm not going to take a photo of it.
Okay. See, now I don't know what to do with... man. Okay. Anyway, a Coast Guard lifeguard...
Lifeguard. How you doing?
I'm not feeling well today, and it's just not. Things aren't going well. I'm having this thing, I mentioned this before, I feel like I'm hungover, except that I wasn't drinking. So I just have the queasiness and the headache and the, like, a low fever, and I just feel like
without
hell.
Any of the...
But I did nothing fun to
even
actually,
get to drink.
You know, deserve it.
Okay.
A Coast Guard lifeboat, although a lifeguard would be awesome. A Coast Guard lifeboat from Station Cape Disappointment in Ilwaco, Washington. Is that how you pronounce that? Is it Ilwaco?
I think you pronounce it Ilwaco, Washington.
Okay. Was able to help out the damaged boat back to port. The crew thinks it was a humpback whale and measured about 30 feet long. USGS said the La Orca and its crew were taking part in a race to Victoria, B.C. when the whale surfaced.
You just said the La Orca.
Well, that is correct. Because
I know it's correct, but it's funny sounding.
Yeah,
because you said the orca.
Right. It's like if you go to the Dalles and there's like because I was talking to a friend about this once. You go through the Dells, and then there's, like, say, the gas station and the Dells, the Shell station. Do you call it the Dells Shell station? Is it the Dells Police Department? Because the name of the city is the Dells.
So, Ricky Ricardo is Richard Richard.
I know. So there, that whale thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they weren't blowing it up, I don't care.
No.
That's just, I mean.
I saw something about it on the news this morning, though, too, and they were saying that the people who had the boat said the whale flew out of the water and slammed into the side of the sailboat.
As they do.
So I thought that was pretty, that's something you're not expecting.
No, it's true. It's probably not a thing you would anticipate. As you get up in the morning and go about your daily chores, you wouldn't think that this day is gonna climax with a whale flying out of the water and assaulting us.
Yes.
So do they have some sort of, was there a motivation ascribed to the whale's behavior?
No.
It just doing whales do?
It may have just been being playful. And,
birds gotta sing, whales gotta fly.
And it was like me eating food. It was like Sammy the most awkward whale. He was trying to be graceful and do something, and he's just like, he slammed into a sailboat. And everyone was like, again, Sammy, really? He's like, I'm sorry.
Is there another snarky whale that's going, you got food on yourself and also a boat?
You're a fail whale, says one of his friends. As they do.
Okay.
Okay, that made me laugh. A 72-year-old Oregon bicyclist struck by a truck and dragged about 150 feet was cited for unsafe operation of a bicycle on a sidewalk, vindicating those of us who drive and have to deal with people on bicycles on the sidewalk all of the time.
Where was he at?
He was in Salem. This is my thing. I read the story over three times, and they said he was struck by a truck towing an equipment trailer as the driver was making a turn. So they don't really make it clear if the guy was
probably in an intersection.
Was on the sidewalk and went off the sidewalk into the intersection, or if the guy was coming out of like a driveway to make a turn and the bicyclist was either way, bicyclist on the sidewalk.
It
where
seems
you're
like,
not supposed to be.
Well, the truck can't be on a sidewalk, so it seems like the cyclist had to be crossing the street somehow.
No, but he could have been coming out of a driveway and making a turn out of a driveway and the guy was on the sidewalk. You know what I mean? Out of like a parking lot or something.
But it wouldn't be. But they'd still put it on the truck then.
Yeah. Probably,
because
yeah.
It's. But it is that. I think he. I mean, I don't know. But he must have been crossing, like if he was in like any sort of suburban area, you know, crossing the street to get from one sidewalk corner to another.
Yeah. So it seems like the guy's making a right turn
so
in his giant truck. Yeah. Well, yeah, people shouldn't be on the sidewalk on their bicycles anyway.
That's not true because sometimes you are legally required to be on the sidewalk. There are places, like you downtown, you cannot be. In certain parts of the city, you must be.
Aren't you supposed to be walking your bike, though? You're not supposed to be riding it.
No, they actually don't specify that. But there are different. That's what makes it so confusing for cyclists because it is different depending on where you go. Mm-hmm. If, for example, if you are here in Southeast Portland, you are not forbidden. From being on or near the sidewalk. Downtown, you are expressly forbidden from being on the sidewalk. So there is no uniformity here. Mm-hmm. But that to me is less the issue than like. You're a bike and a fleshy thing. That's a car or a truck. So just like the law notwithstanding, it seems like just logic and like self-preservation would just have you looking out for those things.
You'd think. The guy was 72.
Well, I mean, but anyway, how did he get to be 72? Clearly he was looking out for himself the previous seven decades.
And my favorite part of the story, and it's okay to laugh at this because the man didn't die. He was treated and released from the hospital.
His name is
okay.
a lot of more butts.
No, it's just that, his name was Antonio Bedoya Cavillo.
No.
But my favorite part is this sentence. It says, Salem police said the driver became aware he had struck Cavillo after motorists repeatedly waved at him, pointing to the bottom of the truck.
Okay, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
They like my mud flaps. They've got Yosemite Sam on them.
Everyone's very friendly today.
That's like a little Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. how do they know what way we're going? Thanks.
A cougar is using part of a South Bend neighborhood as its hunting grounds, and a warning is going out to people who live in the area. Wildlife workers say the young cougar has been seen many times in the Deschutes River Woods neighborhood over the past several weeks. On Wednesday night, workers say the cougar killed a deer in the back lot of a home there, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has now set up a trap to try and contain it. Because the cougar has been seen repeatedly in a residential area in daylight hours, wildlife experts consider the cougar to be a threat, and they will kill it if they can. Last week, Deschutes County deputies shot at the cat, but it's not known if the animal was hit. It has been seen since, and witnesses say it did not appear to be wounded. Also, it was thumbing its nose. Meanwhile, people in the area are being made aware of some tips in dealing with cougars. So keep this in mind if you're living in an area where there are cougars. Be aware of any concentrations of deer or elk, because cougars could be there, too.
Okay. So that's sort of a one brings the other kind of a thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Keep your pets indoors. And if you see a cougar, give the cat a chance to escape and try to make yourself look larger by holding up your arms, clapping, and raising your voice.
You don't really look larger. That's the thing. And if you do look larger, it's just in the way that, like, when you've supersized some onion rings somewhere, and then you go, wow, those are great onion rings. Not, like, large enough to be frightening or to keep me away. It's enough to make me go, hey, guys, look at all these onion rings. I can't possibly eat all these. You got to help me out. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us on this Friday, May 13th. 2011. Next hour, about 1 hour from now, the Rick Emerson radio program will grace your ear holes, which is apparently now a thing that, did you say that Sabrina started saying that too?
Yes, ear holes?
Ear holes. Yes, it's all going according to plan. that is next hour, and I swear to you, we didn't, I said this like 2 days in a row, but today we'll get to not only a penis watch and a cannibal watch, but we'll have a couple of emails from new subscribers, including Irvin.
You said it was Irvin.
I was saying the name and then I had it wrong. I was saying Irving, but I think it's Irvan or Irvin. E-R-V-A-N.
Oh, I don't know. Irvan.
I could be wrong, but I got to get it in front of me.
Melody's mom.
And Melody's mom. So those are just like sitting in a pile, like waiting to be read. And pirates. What?
Well, I guess Jamie Kirk isn't really a new subscriber at this point, but. So, you know, put them in the pile.
So I got stuff to read. So, yeah, we'll get to that. We got.
I'm just mentioning people now, just randomly.
You're just saying things. Celery.
Armchair.
Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about Rodney Dangerfield and more. Here is Don Taylor.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates is angry at the leaking of details concerning the Navy SEALs raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. He says it could endanger the troops who performed the operation. Former Homeland Security Advisor Fran Townsend says she understands Gates' concern, but doesn't see a big danger as long as their names are secret.
This is Navy One.
Yes.
There's no question that the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, are going to look for special forces and try to take revenge. But the particular SEALs who were responsible for the operation, the anonymity of those people is their greatest protection.
Even as Gates was trying to plug leaks, there's word that the Navy SEALs involved recorded the attack wearing helmet-mounted cameras. Former Homeland Security Advisor Fran Townsend, again, says those tapes should never have seen the light of day.
They ought to hold on to it. They ought to use it for understanding sort of after action, the tactics that were used, what was successful, what can be improved on. But under no circumstances should the videotape from the actual raid be revealed, because, of course, our enemies could use it to understand the tactics and the methods.
They should show them at Christmas parties. You know, or like when Obama just wants to go, hey, you guys want to see something awesome? Like, if you donate enough, that's what he should totally do. He should be like, hey, if you donate enough to my campaign in 2012, legally, of course.
If you come to one of those $10,000 a plate dinners, you get to see that.
It's like you get the tote bag or a mug, or you get to see, like, the helmet cam footage of Osama bin Laden going, who are you? Ah, crap. Bam. You know, that would be, I mean, really, I'd start saving money, like, now.
I am merely an accountant on vacation.
My name is Ted. Oh, crap.
Damn it.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Washington State troopers in King County pulled over 223 drivers last month who were driving too slowly in the freeway passing lane.
Thank God.
Breaking a law that not many drivers know about. Of those, 199 were let off with warnings. The Washington State Patrol is putting higher emphasis on keeping slower traffic in the right lane and out of the left general purpose lane, which is the designated passing lane. Many of those who were pulled over didn't know it was against the law, the State Patrol said. Troopers told them to stay out of the left lane if traveling below freeway speeds and not to travel continuously in the left lane for no reason.
People from Idaho!
Violators could be fined $124. One of the concerns for enforcing the law is aggressive drivers who get frustrated at the slower traffic in front of them, Rick Emerson, and as a result, dart from lane to lane to get by other cars.
Okay, now I don't do that. Now, that is not a thing I do. I just sit there and I seethe. People from Idaho should not be allowed to operate goddamn blenders or toasters, let alone 2,000-pound boxes of steel and glass on the... The speed limit is also the limit at which you are supposed to be traveling. You know, it's the maximum, but it's also like the suggested approximate speed. It's not like it's like you could just go 20 miles an hour on the goddamn highway. I don't know what it is with people from Idaho and their inability to go at anything approaching the average velocity.
I've never noticed that it's specifically people from Idaho.
Always people from Idaho. Always as I'm late for a meeting. Always as I got to get to someplace on the other side of town.
See, I always see what Patrick and his sister always refer to as the old man in a hat.
Yeah.
I always get behind the old man in the hat.
Yeah, I know. No, that guy's out there, too.
I'm just kind of always surprised. Somebody had explained to me, because I was like, what's the deal with people not driving in the fast lane? And they keep, like, passing people in the middle lane and then getting back into the middle lane and then passing somebody else. And somebody said, well, the left lane is the passing lane. I'm like, it's the fast lane. And I realize this is another one of the situations where I learned to drive in another state.
Right.
And because, as I've mentioned before, I find this rather hilarious. You learn to drive when you're 16, and then you never, ever have to take a refresher course ever again your whole entire life. Because I have these things that are ingrained from learning to drive in California. And that, like, and I'm always having fights with Patrick about things. Like, he'll go, don't make a U-turn. And I'm like, yeah, I can make a U-turn. He says, no, you can't. I say, yes, I can, unless it's posted that you can't make a U-turn. He says, no, U-turns are illegal. And I'm like, are they?
See, that's
my thing. I really don't. Apparently, I don't know.
I assume they're legal unless it says you can't. But maybe that's because I didn't learn to drive here either. So maybe that is a state by state deal.
And then I've never gotten used to this thing where apparently the left lane is only supposed to be to pass people.
But see, passing is a relative state, because if you're going faster than the other lanes, you are passing them.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they mean that you're not supposed to just keep driving in that lane. But the thing is,
if
you have to keep getting over to get around people.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's one law. I agree with you, because I don't think, when they say passing lane, I don't think that specifies one car. So in other words, if you were going to pass two cars at once, that would be illegal, right? I mean, if you pulled out into the left lane to pass two cars, that would be fine. So if you're passing two cars, but they just happen to be a mile apart, but you're going faster than them, I think that's safer anyway, the way you and I do it. What it comes down to is you and I are the only good drivers that are here. Because going into the left lane and just staying there as long as you are going faster than all the other cars, that is in fact safer, because you're not having to go back and forth all the time.
It is, but I don't think it actually counts as passing in a passing lane. Because one of the things they talked about, the HOV lane, that doesn't count as the so-called fast lane. On freeways that have HOV lanes that are not enforced 24 hours a day, those lanes are, you know. But anyway, HOV lanes are open to all traffic and should be treated like a regular left-side freeway lane. Left-side freeway lanes are normally reserved for passing, so are only to be used to pass, said this guy. So doesn't that mean then you're...
This is all hinges on the legal definition of pass. Because, again, if you're going faster than the cars in the right-hand lane, guess what? You're passing them.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that's what they mean, though. I think it means that you're supposed to be in the middle lane unless the person in front of you is going slower than you want to go. Then you're supposed to get over, pass them, and then get back into the middle lane.
But
that's what passing lane means.
Okay, but see, and we have to get Sam Adams here, obviously, in the studio just to answer this. But again, if you're going to pass two cars at once, that's okay, right? If you were going to pass two cars at once, so how far apart do they have to be before it's no longer legal?
I don't know. They said not to drive in it continuously. I have no idea.
So if you were passing two cars, but they were a quarter of a mile apart, could you do that? Stay in that lane?
I don't know.
I say yes. I say as long as you are continuously exceeding the speed of the cars in the right-hand lane, that is considered one long pass and seems safer than going back and forth and back and forth.
We also have that thing where everybody understands that you're not supposed to pass you're not supposed to pass a bus, a school bus. So, like, you can't go around a school. Yeah, no. If a school bus stops, you're not supposed to go around it. And also, if a school bus is on the other side of the street going the opposite direction.
Okay, now that's
you're
not
also
true.
Supposed. Yes, it is.
No, it's only true if they have their the stop thing going. They have those stop signs.
Yeah, but when they stop, the stop sign comes out. When they're loading and offloading children.
Well, yeah, but if the stop sign is not out, you don't have to.
Right, but
stop.
I mean, when children are getting off or getting on the bus and it stops, you're supposed to stop even if you're on the other side of the street.
Yes.
Well, so what's the deal? But you can go around, like, TriMet buses, right?
Well, yeah, but that's presumably because they're adults. Okay. And if they get killed, that's their fault.
All right.
So.
I also realized driving into work this morning, I don't really know what the difference is between a virus and a bacteria.
A virus is not technically alive.
Okay.
That's not the only difference, but I believe that is the. But that is a. And also, there is no. You cannot. Let's see if I understand this now. There is also, as I understand it, you cannot cure a virus. I believe you can only immunize the body against.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that. I might have that backward. But I believe, first of all, virus is not technically alive, as I understand it. Secondly, I believe it is that a bacteria is something that your body, I believe, can effectively destroy. I believe a virus can only be contained, or can effectively be immunized against it to where it does not affect you.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, but I read that because the only reason I say that because I looked it up one time because I didn't know either, and I think like bits and pieces of it have stuck with me, and I'm forgetting other parts of it. But I think it's something in that neighborhood. By the way, the wording in Washington state law: as long as you are moving faster than the flow of traffic, you may remain in the left lane.
Okay.
So suck that, everybody.
All right.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us on this Friday, the 13th of May, 2011. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up this hour, Science on the March and Entertainment News. Here's Don Taylor.
A 36-year-old Brazilian woman was enabled by the justice system to masturbate in her workplace because she has a strange disease.
And a hot disease.
Ana Catarina Becerra Silvares.
Ana Catarina.
An employee of an accounting firm, a divorced mother of three who lives in a village of Vila Viejo Espirito Santo, suffers from a rare condition known as compulsion orgasmic, caused by a chemical alteration in the brain region of the cortex, which leads her to masturbate several times a day to relieve the deep anguish that it causes.
It's also the name of Storm's new album.
Under the circumstance, Becerra started legal proceedings with the company where she works that she eventually won and enables her to masturbate for 15 minutes every 2 hours, besides using the computer to see erotic images that stimulate her desire.
Are you reading an urban legend? Are you reading like some sort of many times forwarded thing that's just going around the internet?
No, I got it from like an Australian news source, and a lot of the Australian news reads like urban legends.
It's all made up.
But apparently it is actually true. The Brazilian newspaper North Regiao reported the woman confessed, "There was a day I had to masturbate 47 times," adding, "I began to suppose this could not be normal and decided to seek help." She follows a treatment that includes a potent cocktail of sedatives that allow her to only have to masturbate 18 times a day.
Okay. All right, then. You are listening to, I don't even know where to go with that. You're listening to Legion of News here at, is there a photo? I mean, it seems like this article is useless without pics.
Yeah.
All right, well, in any event.
Just use your imagination, like she does.
Keelan has offered to, quote, relieve her deep anguish.
On his air mattress?
Yes. okay.
Yeah. Let's do science. Let's be all about the science.
Let's just take a second here while I have a refreshing swig of this this crisp, cool, clean water.
Oh, you're not going to play the refreshing beverage song?
I don't know that I actually have the refreshing beverage song here for... wait.
Okay, there we go.
All right. That's fantastic. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. 1609. Hey, speaking of which, did you see they rewired the light fixture in the bathroom?
I did see that.
It kind of weirded me out for a second because I was just, it's that thing where you just, it's like the muscle memory where you don't even really look for it. Your hand, it's like when, if you ever go into a building where they've just changed the doorknob. And, like, the doorknob, like, they've gone to one of those ones that, like, people with hooks can use. And you just suddenly, your hand goes, well, this isn't, this door is wrong. And you have to look. But now that one's got timers on it. It's got timers.
For the fans.
Also, you know what they're going to be doing? He's going to be installing, like, motion-sensitive lights.
Oh, those are good.
So that you walk into a room, lights go on. You walk out of the room, lights go off.
Could you ask him if he'll get us one of those Dyson hand dryers?
And a robot to serve us drinks.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. That's what we want for Christmas. Squires Electric, they're not going to bring you a robot. I mean, they might. I mean, depending. I mean, there might be some sort of like an upsell fee for that. But if your
robot is having electrical difficulties, they could probably help you fix your robot.
You should totally just put a big pile of scrap in a corner and go, my robot seems to have a problem. Can you fix it and put it back together? And then just see if, like, when you come back, there's a robot that's just sort of puttering around and going, dip. Like they do. It's 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric.
That was your robot sound?
Yes. What's your robot sound?
I don't have a robot sound.
Okay, well then let's just halt with the brickbats,
okay,
shall we?
All right.
Or you can go to facebook.com, you bunch of jackals, / Squires Electric. That is facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can find out more about all that they do. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical and salvage contractors and supervisors. Whether it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or your office or in your head, frankly. Like in that Twilight Zone where Telly Savalas is getting on with the robot chick but forgets she's a robot because he lives on the asteroid. They can take care of any or all of those things, or, you know, some. 503-252-1609. Good enough for the studios of the Emerson News Network. Good enough for your home or business. That is Squires Electric, proud sponsors of this. Science on the March.
Dozens of leopard sharks have been washing up dead in California since April, and now a necropsy. Is that necropsy or necropsy?
I believe it is necropsy.
Necropsy.
Or necropsy.
See, you don't know either.
I don't even know.
It's autopsy, so it would be necropsy.
Nothing.
Shows at least one of the sharks died of massive internal bleeding, such that blood was even coming out of the shark's skin. The necropsy conducted by the California Department of Fish and Game uncovered inflammation, bleeding, and lesions in the brain and hemorrhaging from the skin near the vents. According to the story in the Daily News, bleeding was additionally detected around the tested female's other internal organs. The results suggest that the 50 sharks that have washed up dead at Redwood Shores in Redwood City, California since April must have died a slow and agonizing death. The bacterial study and microscopic tissue analysis are underway. Investigators have not ruled out a human-caused spill of toxic chemicals, although no big spill has been reported in the region over the last couple of months. Sean Van Summeren, executive director of the Pelagic Shark Research Foundation in Santa Cruz, suspects we're only seeing a tiny fraction of what's going on, he said, meaning more sharks and other animals are likely being infected by whatever the problem is. So, something's going on with sharks.
There's something with sharks.
Yes. So. Japanese officials have finally admitted what had long been suspected. A nuclear meltdown at the crippled Daiichi facility near Japan has occurred, with a pool of molten fuel discovered at the bottom of its number one reactor. Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, officials entered the reactor last week for the first time and discovered at least 5 feet of the nuclear core's 13-foot-long fuel rods had melted from exposure to the air. The news comes as the government has repeatedly tried gaining control of the disaster since the earthquake and tsunami struck in mid-March. TEPCO now faces the distinct possibility that a pool of molten radioactive fuel burned a hole through the containment vessel.
That sounds bad, like a thing you don't want to happen.
Yes, Junichi Matsumoto, a spokesman, said, "We will have to revise our plans."
Do you think?
"We cannot deny the possibility that a hole in the pressure vessel caused water to leak.
We'd plan to avoid dying of radiation sickness, but we're gonna approach that differently now."
Yeah. Earlier this week, TEPCO stated it had fixed a leak in the number 3 reactor that was allowing radioactive water to flow into the Pacific Ocean.
The number 3 reactor is the least popular reactor with the parents.
In April, the company...
Number 1 reactor never melt down.
Oh, number 3 reactor.
Why are you such
bring us shame.
Why are you so embarrassing?
We make you number 4 reactor.
That's offensive, Dawn.
The company faced a similar nightmare when the number 2 reactor was discharging radioactive water into the ocean. The news comes after Prime Minister Naoto Kan ordered the nuclear facility in Hamaoka to shut down over growing concerns of its location near a dangerous tectonic fault line that experts fear could experience major seismic activity within the next 30 years.
I don't mean to, when I ask this, I really ask only because I am legitimately curious about this. This seems like a thing. I think this is a thing that a lot of people have probably thought. So I don't know if anybody's actually just sort of asked this. But really, honestly, doesn't it seem to you like of all the countries in the world, Japan would have taken the biggest number of steps to make sure that, like, radiation didn't just screw the whole joint up?
Well, yeah.
I mean, they have some experience with that. And it seems like they, more than most folk, they understand exactly what radiation does if that genie gets out of the bottle or whatever. So you figure like they would have gone like, well, we've got wind too, maybe we could try with that, and then maybe less with the nuclear power.
They secretly want it to happen because, hey, Mothra.
Or they can create or over generations they can become immune.
Yeah,
that's probably not going to happen. But all right.
Most of us have experienced the feeling that no matter what your brain mood or your mood want, your ears can't handle any more music blasting into them from your earbuds. It's a slight discomfort deep inside your ear canal that keeps building. You get it when you're listening to it. Musicians get it when they're on stage. People who wear hearing aids get it all of the time. It's called listener fatigue. Now, a group of engineers at Aceus Technologies in Longmont, Colorado, have made headway into understanding why listener fatigue happens and how to prevent it. The new research was led by musician and audio engineer Stephen Ambrose, who has worked for more than 35 years to develop in-ear monitors, devices worn by performers and producers, allowing them to hear the music rather than ambient noise. We tried for years to turn down the volume, but still experienced audio fatigue, even at the lowest levels we could get by with on stage, he said. The fatigue couldn't simply be fixed in the mix because it now appears to be a physiological phenomenon.
It's the cilia in your ear.
They said the sound waves enter a sealed ear canal and create an oscillating pressure chamber inside the eardrum that can produce a dramatic boost in sound pressure levels. Data from simulations coupled with laboratory observations suggest the boost triggers the acoustic reflex, a defense mechanism in the ear that dampens the transfer of sound energy from the eardrum to the cochlea. It dampens it by about 50 decibels, or approximately the volume of a normal conversation. The acoustic reflex does not stop the pressure oscillations in the eardrum. One of the engineers behind the research said, paradoxically, the protective reflex makes loud volumes seem lower than they really are, potentially prompting the listener to turn up the volume even more. So the eardrum, which is already shaken by the oscillations of the pressure chamber, is then bombarded by the boosted volume, and the tiny muscles involved in the acoustic reflex are activated again, and the repeated engagement and disengagement of those muscles leads to the pain and discomfort.
You know who doesn't experience that? People, and this is true, don't speak to the people who are drunk, because if you are drunk, it actually anesthetizes that section of your inner ear, and so you do not register the pain and discomfort, which is why drunk people can never have stuff loud enough. That is why people at a party don't notice that everything has gotten so goddamn loud, and why the music is too loud. That's why when you're at a bar and you go like, who can even hear anything over this goddamn music and this clatter and the ruckus? It's because they are drinking and they have anesthetized the inner ear, and they are not registering pain and discomfort the way that sober people do.
Interesting.
So that is not your imagination. The next time you're like at some gathering of winos or whatever, and everything seems to be really, really loud, like louder than you would ideally want it, that is not your imagination.
Well, they've looked at two different ways that you can deal with this with earbuds. One was to...
Quit calling them earbuds because it's gross.
I know, it's gross. One was to retrofit existing in-ear headphones with a thin film of medical-grade polymer that's stretched over a pressure-alleviating hole. And that provides a sacrificial membrane to absorb the pressures that build up in the eardrum. And the other was they've also developed a small inflatable seal they're calling the Ambrose Diaphonic Ear Lens, which looks like a tiny ear-sealing balloon.
I totally want one.
It's used to inflate the polymer membrane, and it has enough force to both inflate the ear lens and keep the device in your ear canal for as long as you're wearing it. And it vibrates with the oscillating pressure in the ear canal and radiates excess energy out of a closed space in front of the eardrum.
And this is a thing that I don't think about it all the time, but this is a thing that I pay attention to whenever these stories are in the news, because I do not I say this with headphones on, like, you know, five times probably what is a healthy volume level. But I am that guy where I just... I mean, I take reasonable steps to make sure that I preserve my to preserve my hearing, but I also know that places like, I don't know, here, sitting behind a microphone, it just doesn't. That is a thing where it's not really viable for me. But early on in my life, I started getting the ringing that would never go away and it didn't stop, and that it's all and that is now always there to a certain degree in the back of my hearing, like no matter, to the point where I don't even really notice it anymore unless I actually stop to think about it. And it hasn't gotten worse over the last 10 or 15 years, but it got so bad so quickly that it terrified me. Because if I had just continued listening to music and going to shows and living the way I was and not protecting my hearing, I mean, I can't even imagine, like, the level that my tinnitus would be at now. I mean, it would be unreal. You know, and then you get that thing that Johnny Ramone got where his... Because your brain, the way your brain and your ears work is just fascinating. Because Johnny Ramone, I forget what the scientific name is, but the colloquial term for it is dog ears, where he started to go deaf and his brain just compensated by turning the volume up, like, in his head. And so his brain just said, well, I guess we need to boost it over on the preamp side. And it just amplified somewhere in his actual, like, brain, in the synapses. It boosted the volume level as he perceived it. And so he would, like, he said he couldn't even go down to take the subway anymore because the subway was like a rocket taking off next to the side of his head.
Wow.
And it was just the weirdest. And Townsend has said the same thing. Townsend said that occasionally everything will seem really, really quiet except for this hum that's in the foreground. And then things will just be loud for days on end for no reason, like the same noise. And that freaked me out. And so that's why I started wearing, like, anytime I would go to a show or anything, I would get, like, and this is a thing. I don't know if you did this growing up because you went to a lot of shows, a lot of punk shows where, you know, it was uncool to wear earplugs. And it was like, uncool or not, that's a thing I started doing because I did not. And reading those stories, that's one of those things where as much as it never works for those guys to get on television and go, don't do drugs, because then you're like, doing drugs are awesome. Look at Keith Richards. He's fantastic. I got to get me some heroin. As much as that never works, all of the rock stars getting on television and doing interviews and whatever during the 80s and talking about tinnitus, that actually did work for me and for a lot of people I know that just decided that they didn't want to be. Because the prospect of walking around the rest of your life with a thing going in the back of your head all the time was very, very unnerving.
Yeah, I started wearing the little foam earplugs that you wear to, like, the gun range and things like that. It shows after I'd gone to a concert at the Whiskey A Go-Go, actually, and it was a band called 45 Grave.
Yeah.
And they were so loud, and it was one of those things that a friend of mine and I actually went out into the parking lot to get away from it because it was so loud. And we still had to shout to hear each other, like, out in the parking lot outside.
Following you.
And not only did I have tinnitus, but actually my jaw and my neck hurt for like 2 days afterwards because it had done so much damage to my ears.
Yeah, and for me it was Motorhead, and for days afterward I would just be like this, and it was like that's when you think like, well, this is it. I've done it. I've broken my ears. They're not going to work anymore at all. All right, here is Don Taylor.
That's all science.
Really? Okay. Before we end science, let me just say, and how often does this happen? I was kind of right about the bacteria versus virus thing. Somebody sent me a quick overview. So it's sort of a, you know, in like a two columns, like, you know, yes or no. Bacteria, living organisms. Viri, viruses, are non-living organisms. Bacteria are localized. Such that they're on one section of your body or one organ, whereas viruses are systemic, so they attack an entire system, your cardiopulmonary system, your respiratory system. Let's see. Bacteria are considered larger in terms of nanomicrons or whatever the hell. The virus is very small. Bacteria treated with antibiotics. Viruses treated with vaccines to prevent the spread, but they cannot be completely stopped. Let's see, and bacteria are unicellular, they have a single cell. Viruses are, in fact, this is the weird thing when you read it first like this, viruses, in fact, have no cells because they are not alive. And that's one of those things that, I mean, I understand that there are things smaller than cells, but you don't like to think of a thing like spelunking around in your body that has no cells because it's not really alive. And yet it's sort of there just going, hi, you know, inside your, which, like a spider.
Like a spider.
Or a Nazi.
So that is your voice for both spiders and viri.
And Nazis.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Let's just end. There's your science on the march.
Hi.
Brought by Squire's Electric.
Is that actually what a spider sounds like in your head when you see one? When you like go out to outside and there's one hanging there outside, and you actually see it and you imagine in your head it's going, hi.
Yeah, no, it's. I was actually in my home office the other day, and there was one up in the like the corner of the ceiling, and even hanging out there for however long. Because I always imagine with a top hat going like, wah, you know, and just sort of like lifting it up and going, hi, you know, and it's like. Always. I don't know why. I don't know if that comes from somewhere. I don't think so. I think in my head, that's just, I decided when I was very small that that's what they sound like. And that they all have top hats, which they do.
Texas Rep. Ron Paul announced today that he will run for the GOP nomination for president in 2012.
It should literally be a run. It should be like Stephen King's The Long Walk.
Yeah.
Where they all just have to, him and Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin all get on the road, just keep going.
It should be like Running Man.
Yes.
And then whichever one is still alive.
Not that we advocate. That's Don Taylor saying that. I advocate a long life, and I wish the best of health to all of our elected officials.
This is the third attempt for the man known on Capitol Hill as Dr. No.
Or whack job.
For his enthusiasm for bashing runaway spending and government overreach. The 75-year-old Paul, who first ran for president as a libertarian in 1988, said, time has come around to the point where the people are agreeing with much of what I've been saying for 30 years.
As all the box office receipts for Atlas Shrugged will demonstrate.
Sorry. He made his announcement in an interview on Good Morning America from New Hampshire, where he planned his first event for his presidential campaign today. 3 years ago, the former flight surgeon and outspoken critic of the Federal Reserve became an internet sensation when he made a spirited but doomed bid for the 2008 Republican presidential nomination. He was first elected to Congress in 1976 and is known for holding unconventional views while keeping a smile on his face, espousing a sort of modern Republican populism.
Okay.
He's delivered over 4,000 babies and is against abortion, but he doesn't think the federal government should regulate it. And
blah, blah, blah. Libraries are bad, blah.
Anyway, so that's happening.
All right, Ron Paul.
Yeah. Elsewhere in politics, Mitt Romney really, really, really doesn't like the health care reforms that President Obama signed into law last year.
Which were modeled on those in his own state of Massachusetts.
He writes in an op-ed in this week's USA Today, if I am elected president, I will issue on my first day in office an executive order paving the way for waivers from Obamacare for all 50 states. Subsequently, I will call on Congress to fully repeal Obamacare.
So basically, he's not saying he'll do anything. He's saying, like, he'll just sort of say, like, come on, would you help me out?
Yeah.
Like, he'll ask some other people to do some stuff that they may or may not actually do.
Yeah. So he's on the road this week, traveling around and laying out his 5-part healthcare alternative plan.
Juggling.
He isn't expected to run away from the efforts to torpedo his healthcare stuff, but he will likely acknowledge some flaws in state legislation. The main focus of his remarks will be on the second part of the GOP's repeal and replace rallying cry. That's what they're. That's the motto this
repeal
year.
Repeal and replace.
Repeal and replace.
Shouldn't we
one?
At least have it in the other, you know, the other way around? I mean, if we really were going to do this, can't we replace it before we get rid of it? This is sort of like before you take the tire off your car, you'd like to think that maybe you have a spare. You have one with you that you're going to put on.
Yeah. So in case you think that Mitt Romney, cares about you and wants to make sure that, you know, you're cared for with this whole health care plan thing. Basically, the Wall Street Journal outlines his plan that he'd offer state governments block grants for the federal share of Medicaid and children's health programs, allowing states to tailor their own programs. He would offer individuals a choice between the current tax credits that help pay for employer-provided health insurance or a new tax credit to help purchase your own plan. And he would narrow provisions of the national law that bans insurance from denying coverage for pre-existing conditions. Because, you know, what's wrong with that? People would be allowed to purchase insurance across state lines, and small businesses would be allowed to form insurance purchasing pools. Which both of those are actually okay. And he would call for caps on medical malpractice awards and expanding tax-advantaged health savings accounts.
Okay.
So
I just don't understand. My whole thing is I never understand what the president can do. Because somebody says, remember, the president can president has no real power, only the House and Senate have power. But then there's that whole thing about the executive order. That's the thing that I always wonder about. We just say, well, you know, just by executive order, the president has a decree that we, if I was president, I would just do, I wouldn't do anything. Yeah. Through Congress. I would just say, like, I'm going to do everything by executive order until you just kick me out of this place. I would just sit there all day.
Tuesday, executive order.
That's all I would do is I would just get me in a bank of auto pens, and I'd be like, we begin the signing now. And I would just, day and night, just for things that didn't make any sense, things that did make sense, things that just struck me as amusing at that moment, and just
I'm
issue
making
them.
Hulk Hogan a prince.
I mean, come on. So, I mean, as opposed to just, you know, Mitt Romney sitting there going, well, for my first act, I'm going to suggest that some other people maybe take under advisement the idea that they'll consider a thing that they may or may not institute down the road in some half measure.
He's also doing that thing that a lot of Republicans are doing where he just keeps going, because that Obamacare, I'll just keep saying the word Obamacare over and over again. And if somebody says, well, what exactly is it that you would like to revise or repeal in the plan? He's just like, Obamacare.
You know,
it's bad.
And he looks
he has no specifics.
If Bruce Campbell had that operation where they break your chin and then they make your jaw like real small, he kind of looks like that. He's like a really uninteresting looking Bruce Campbell to me.
With bad Republican hair.
Yeah, he's got the weird Ken doll hair too. No, I'm not with that.
A Hillsborough man practicing a quick draw at a life-sized poster of Don Michael Corleone from The Godfather accidentally fired a shot that hit the poster in the shoulder, and the slug went through the wall, striking a flat-screen television in his neighbor's apartment.
Nope.
Travis Hood, 27, was taken to the Washington County Jail and accused of recklessly endangering. The shooting took place at 8150 Southwest Barn Roads, apartment C202, at 250 on Wednesday. Hood reportedly used a .357 Magnum.
I would like to suggest right now that we all agree to call him Fredo.
Yeah. There were no injuries except to the neighbor's television.
And also to any illusions that guy might have that he's an actual thug or a capo in any way.
He was in his apartment.
Shooting in a picture of Michael Corleone.
Practicing quick draw with a .357 Magnum that apparently had live rounds in it at a poster in his living room.
I guess maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I assume that maybe at least part of the poster had something bulletproof or impervious behind it, but he then missed his target area and hit like aiming for the stud when you're aiming at a nail and missing.
I don't think if you're in your apartment,
you shouldn't be shooting at 357 anyway.
There is nothing that is bulletproof.
The ironing board behind it isn't going to stop it.
What are you going to put, like a sheet of titanium or something?
I have this TV tray that I've put behind here.
Let's do entertainment.
Okay.
Shall we?
Well, sure. Why not? There we go.
We don't have to.
No, it's time. Here's your entertainment news for Friday, May 13th, 2011.
Actor Matthew Perry has announced that he is spending a month away from show business to stay on top of his sobriety. In a statement, he said, I'm making plans to go away for a month to focus on my sobriety and continue my life in recovery. Please enjoy making fun of me on the World Wide Web.
Awesome. Excellent. Good for him. Yeah, that's a guy that seems to have the right attitude about the whole thing.
Yeah. The New York Post reports that Leonardo DiCaprio has split with his longtime girlfriend, Israeli supermodel Bar Raffaelli.
You step up one in line, Don.
Woohoo! Oh, wait. I don't want to be with Leonardo DiCaprio. He's pudding-faced.
Uh-huh.
It was amicable. They're still friends, and they're still talking, said a source. They just grew apart and went their separate ways. Neither were ready to settle down, and both have busy careers that have been taking them in different directions.
Okay.
Because I knew you'd care. Will Ferrell will be honored with the 14th annual Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. The October 23rd ceremony will take place in the Kennedy Center's Concert Hall in Washington, D.C. In a statement, Ferrell said, I am truly honored to receive this distinction. I will now begin cultivating a Mark Twain-esque mustache in anticipation of the event.
Speaking of Mark Twain, I was skipping over all of this with Will Ferrell. Do you know anybody who's actually read that Twain autobiography that came out at Christmas time?
No, I wanted to, and I never picked it up, and I haven't read it.
Because at this point, I'm just going to wait until it comes out in paperback or whatever anyway, or I can get it at the library or something, because it's massive, and I know, first of all, it's one of those things that I would have to buy it because I would never be able to read it in like the 1 week or something that those new releases get at the library. But it's just... I am surprised that kind of didn't get more press than it did. Because that's kind of not only is that one of the greatest publicity stunts ever, it was also conceived, you know, like 100 years ago. In fact, more than 100 years ago, because it was 100 years after his death. So that is, that's a thing where you almost wish you could reanimate him just for like an hour and go, that was awesome. All right. Back to the grave.
Yeah, I really wanted to read it, but it's that thing, the two issues. One, great big giant hardback books like that cost a fortune. And the other is it's really hard to read them because you have to actually be sitting someplace with it propped up. And, you know, if it's the big, thick hardcover. Like, I love Thomas Pynchon, and I still have a copy of, in hardcover, of Mason and Dixon sitting at home
just
that I've never read.
Them.
Because every time I go to pick it up, I go, ugh! Yeah. And I have to, like, just, like, put it on something. I can't just hold it with one hand while I'm eating a sandwich or something. I have to hoist it into place and put it on, like, a... You know, an easel or something.
I've spent the last couple of days actually with a Kindle, not mine. It was the one I borrowed, I don't really know that I'm prepared to get one. But I got to tell you, I'd only ever seen one for like 2 minutes. It was the one my mom had, but I've had a Kindle for the last couple of days, and I did not think that I would say this. I was one of those, you know, what I like real books on paper with, which I do, and I love. Got one with me right now. Take one everywhere I go. Big fan of books and all that. But I have now moved past the point where I view that as the only acceptable way to read something. And I don't even mean like ideologically. It was that, like, I never had any sort of like ideological or like weird, like, I didn't have any sort of like weird principle or philosophical based opposition to reading things on the Kindle. My whole thing was like, well, but looking at a screen is just going to be a drag of it. And I got to tell you, that Kindle is uncanny. The way that you, like, within just a couple of minutes, forget that you are looking at an electronic screen. It's sort of weird, actually.
Yeah, they're really nice, and I actually think I could live with one of those. I have discovered, though, I have Kindle on my iPhone. I can't read books on my phone.
Well, but see, to me,
I just can't do it.
I use the Kindle app. And to me, the Kindle app does not look the same as like the Kindle, for example, because the Kindle app, this is just for me, is too bright, and after a while, your eyes, you get the audio, you get the ocular equivalent of the ear fatigue syndrome, where you're looking at the screen, and after a while, your eyes just kind of go ugh, and they cross, and you just don't. But the thing about the Kindle is, I think it's the lack of. It's either not backlit or it has a different kind of backlighting. So when you are staring at, I think, any sort of illuminated computer screen, even if it's that Kindle app, I think after a while your eyes just start to fuzz over. The Kindle, though, by dint of not being backlit, does not have that effect, and there's no glare is the other thing. So I'm sure that, I mean, that's a thing that within 5 years, probably none of the reading applications will be different enough from each other. In other words, they'll have solved all of those problems on all the platforms within a couple of years. Right now, I think, from what I have seen, the Kindle seems to be the most out front in terms of looking at it. But, it, you know, it's going to be like the phone, where there's going to be so little difference between them in a couple of years that it won't matter. So,
huh. Well, here's a probably really don't care about this up till the very end of this piece, for me personally, but... An actor is named Saoirse Ronan, last seen in the action film Hannah. I don't know how you pronounce her first name, Saoirse. She's going to star in The Host, the movie based on the novel by Twilight author Stephanie Meyer. The picture centers on an alien species called Souls, who attach themselves into human bodies and erase their personalities. Ronan plays Melanie Strider, a human implanted by a soul named Wanderer, who wages a battle with Melanie to take over and obliterate her memories. All of which sounds horrible, mm-hmm. until you get to the part where it's going to be directed by Andrew Niccol, who directed Lord of War and Gattaca.
Really?
Yeah.
He's an odd choice.
He also wrote The Truman Show.
He's not a bad choice, but he's an odd choice because she's such a... Well, that might be a conscious attempt to move away from the lighter, sort of pulpier fare. You know, not just in terms of, I mean, in her writing. Maybe somebody decided that was like the next big step for the Stephanie Meyer franchise as opposed to the Twilight franchise.
Yeah.
Is if you could get critical respect and if you could get actual film dorks to say like, well, no, this movie's actually really good, then that actually broadens like her revenue base like exponentially. So didn't now wasn't The Host a Japanese film as well? Wasn't
yeah.
there
Korean.
Okay, but I'm thinking. Okay, yeah. But they're two different things.
Yeah,
they're not related.
A Korean horror movie.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, no, this is Stephanie Meyer's new franchise.
So this isn't that like that little sequel thing she wrote. Because you remember she wrote the four Twilight books, and then she, and then there was like a little tiny novella or something.
No, this is a whole
separate. This is like she's starting a brand new thing.
Right.
Okay. All right. With that, we should do this. All right. We're going to end this episode of Legion of News, which comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. By the way, you said you were feeling strangely hungover, even though you weren't drunk. More than one listener has just said, with sort of an electronic cough, Vicodin hangover. So, you know, I'm just passing that along. I don't know that that's... and so forth. Advanced science and technology and magic and thoughts and thinking and occasional scolding by Mr. Thomas Kill. Executive producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenekoa. Next hour of the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. By the way, just moments ago, joined by brand new subscriber Jordan.
Jordan
in someplace foreign. Where's APOAE?
I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you.
Is that even a word?
I don't know. We're over time. We got to go. Thanks for listening. See you on Monday. Bye now.